and welcome to AstroTalk UK. AT UK is a not-for-profit 30-minute weekly audio podcast primarily for and by amateur astronomers in the UK. Available only online, AT UK is a virtual meeting point for the amateur astronomy community. Each episode is an MP3 file which can be downloaded automatically with a free subscription via one of the many podcast readers. I use iTunes. My name is Gurbir Singh, and I host AT UK. I am not a scientist, nor am I an astronomer. Topics of discussion have no fixed boundaries other than their relevance to amateur astronomy. Each week's episode consists of pre-recorded conversations with individuals discussing their roles, lives, and achievements of amateur astronomers and their hobby. More about AT UK at www.astrotalkuk.org. If you have a topic for discussion, drop me a note on info@astrotalkuk.org. AstroTalk UK, amateur astronomy, expert opinion. Episode 23, Sunday, July the 6th, 2008. Telescopes before Galileo, Part 1. Hans Lippershey's patent application in the Netherlands for a telescope was formally denied on the 2nd of October, 1608. Nonetheless, it is that individual, that place, and that date which history associates with the invention of the telescope. Most of us are aware of the fundamental astronomical discoveries Galileo went on to make with it in the following year, but could they have been made earlier? Chris Lord, an accomplished amateur astronomer, has completed a major piece of research in telescope and optics to mark the International Year of Astronomy in 2009. In this episode, Chris talks about the theory of vision, optics, and the making and use of lenses during the almost two centuries from Euclid to Galileo. Next year, 2009, is the International Year of Astronomy, and it marks the 400th anniversary of the telescope, at least the 400th anniversary of Galileo using the telescope to observe the night sky. Chris Lord, member of Blackpool and District Astronomical Society, otherwise known as BADAS, has developed a thorough and fascinating new talk to mark this special occasion. The talk is called The Early Telescope. In this history, Chris has uncovered substantial evidence of archaeological artifacts, books and works by so many scholars which indicate that the telescope had been invented and been used long before Galileo. Chris, before we start talking about that, what drove you to put this talk together?
That's a good question. I started liaising with a man called Roger Saraggio at the University of Arizona, and he designs refractor objectives as a hobby. And I wanted to compile all the different types of refractor objective. And this drew me further and further back in time until the time of the Dollands in the mid-18th century, when they developed the first commercial achromatic doublets. I then went back before then to when the earliest single lens refractors were built, just to try and put some context into the Dollond's development of the achromatic doublet. And I thought, well, it's the 400th anniversary of the telescope coming up on the, officially it's the 2nd of October this year, because that's when the States General in Holland received a patent application. I thought, well, it would be a good idea to actually turn this into a talk. And it hadn't been planned as such, but I just mentioned it to our secretary, and he said, well, we'll pencil you in for a talk in October, because we meet on the first Wednesday of October, and the first Wednesday of October this year is October the 1st, the actual day before the official 400th anniversary. And then when I developed the part of the talk which dealt with the nascent telescope itself, and the Galilean refractor, Kepler's version of the refractor, which is the astronomical refractor, and then the run-up to the Dollands and the achromatic doublet, I thought, well, I'd better say something about reflectors. So I putting a fair amount on reflectors from their earliest development through to 1800, basically. And 1800 then became a sort of cut-off date for the lecture. And then having developed this part of the slideshow, PowerPoint presentation, that dealt with the early refracting telescope, I thought, well, what about before the refracting telescope? You need to explain why it wasn't invented before 1608. Mm. You know, why? What happened in the hundreds, if not thousands of years before?
Today, in the 21st century, we have a fairly good understanding of optics. We understand how we see objects, not only from the physics of light, but also the biological and chemistry processes within the eye and the brain. But going back to before Galileo, how did people think they saw things?
You have to go back a long time before that, something like, well, at least 1,500 years. If you go back to the time of Democritus, about 700 BC, they thought that light was visual rays. They didn't think of light in terms of energy emitted by the sun or any other luminous object. They thought that light was visual rays which were somehow emitted by the eye and interacted with objects and then were reflected back from the objects back into the eye. And so there was an interaction between the observer and the thing seen. And that explained why different observers stood next to each other, saw slightly different aspects of the same thing that they were looking at. And it also explained, to some extent, visions that you have when your eyes are closed, and even when you're asleep. So the visitation-type dreams and things like this. Their understanding of optics was strongly linked to how you saw. They didn't see it as two separate things. And it wasn't until Euclid, about 350 BC, that any sort of geometric principles of optics was developed. And he only had four optical principles. I mean, there was something, 12 volumes of geometry that he produced, but he only had a slim pencil volume on optics. And they had this peculiar notion, it's called the intromission theory of vision, where the visual rays are projected from the eye onto the object. And this really hampered their ability to understand how you could even create a telescope in the first place. There were two other people, it was Archimedes and Hieron. And Archimedes lived in Syracuse, in Sicily, and he developed all manner of curious inventions, and one that's attributed to him, mainly apocryphally, because the original literature is long since lost, is his burning mirrors. He was supposed to have destroyed Marcellus's fleet. Marcellus was a Roman commander, by setting fire to the tar on the ship's planks using reflecting mirrors. And they think it was a series of plain mirrors that were operated by soldiers, and they directed the sun's rays to a rough focus by individually tilting an array of flat mirrors. And the mirrors could be made out of burnished brass, I suppose, or something like this. And it was proved to be workable. In the 18th century, Comte de Buffon produced a similar system, and he proved you could set fire to planks at the distance of about 150 feet. So they knew that mirrors could focus light, and they knew fairly well about the concept of focal points, because they used them as burning mirrors. And they also knew a similar thing with lenses. And lenses were either used as means of setting fire to things, so they were like burning lenses, but they were also used to magnify print or to magnify things that you want to look at. And they found lots of lenses in various archaeological sites, primarily since the middle of the 19th century. The first one to be discovered was at the Library of Nimrud in northern Iraq.
So these are archaeologists finding objects in the archaeological record which are lenses?
Yes. The first one that is the most obviously is a lens. It's called the Layard lens. It's in the British Museum. Layard was a young man a bit of an adventurer, and he was out in northern Iraq in the late 1840s trying to track down Nineveh. And he came across the ruins of the palace of King Sargon, which had been destroyed around 612 BC by the Medes and Babylonians. The city had been subject to invasion after invasion, year after year, as a coordinated campaign from about 618 BC right through to 608 BC. And the library was fired in 612. Now, the library consisted of clay tablets, which used to keep all their permanent records on. And they had a lifespan of probably about 200 years, or they would do normally. But what they used to write on was waxed boards. And the waxed boards, of course, they burnt wonderfully. And the intensity of the heat fused all the clay tablets and turned them to brick. And they brought over 20,000 of these clay tablets back in 1853. Now, buried amongst all this lot was a lens, which looks remarkably like a spectacle lens. It's not round, it's oval in shape, and it has a peculiar curve on the front surface. It's a convex surface, it's been polished flat on the back, and it's flat on the back to about 35 microns. So someone has spent a long time polishing the black surface as flat as they could possibly get it. The front surface is not a sphere, it's a toroid, and it's got 5 diopters different correction between the long axis and the vertical narrow axis. And they reckon it was either used by someone who'd made it for himself, or maybe someone who'd made it for the king, and just to use the monocle. And the man obviously suffered from astigmatism. Now, I'm not saying that they knew how to work out the astigmatism correction. It would have probably been done by trial and error. But nevertheless, it's a lens that's obviously used for visual purposes. It's not used for setting fire to things, because it's not that short of focus.
Right. A great deal of technology in the ability of individuals to grind so accurately.
Yeah, the lens I hasten to add is made out of rock crystal. In fact, all the lenses, about 450 of them, scattered around various museum collections across the globe. And they're either catalogued as talismans, amulets, tokens, markers, buttons, anything but what they clearly are, lenses. They look like lenses. You can see through them. They magnify. And if you rest them on print, it makes the print far easier to read. Now, there wasn't much in the way of printed word at the time I'm talking about. Printed books were developed. The Library of Pergamon, I suppose, you're talking about 2,100 years ago. But they would nevertheless have fine things that would be very difficult to read or very, very difficult to see without having some sort of magnification. You see, all the lenses that I'm talking about, they're all short focal length lenses. They're eye lenses. They'd make eyepieces for a telescope.
And they're quite big then as well.
Physically. Well, not all of them, no. Some of them are quite small. Some of them are only about 10, 15 millimetres in diameter. And the biggest ones are no more than about 40 millimetres in diameter. But there's no long focal length lenses. There are some concave lenses. They found some concave lenses at a site near Ephesus when, 1920s I think it was. There's quite a collection of those as well. There's dozens and dozens of them, which is unusual. I mean, why would you want a concave lens? Because it's utterly useless. You can't set fire to anything with it because it makes things smaller. It diverges the sun's rays rather than concentrates them. Maybe they were using them for people who in later life has lost the visual accommodation.
One of the wonders of the world, the Farras Lighthouse, that must have used some very large lenses. Did that?
It didn't use lenses. It provided a light, navigational light, day and night. Now, the day system, obviously, it would be no use burning wood or something in a cupola, which they did at night. We know he's using that during the day. I mean, we're talking about the island of Alexandria in the mouth of the Nile Delta. I mean, high, bright sunlight on a good sunny day, so you wouldn't see the fire at all. What they'd got, they reckon, at the bottom of the tower was a huge bronze mirror. Now, it's problematic if they could actually produce something like that, but there are drawings, the architectural drawings, or bits of them, and references to them, survive to this day. And the mirror would have been probably something like a metre across, and a very long focal length. You're talking something like 60 metres focal length.
Right.
And it lay at the bottom of a tower. At the top of the tower was a huge prism system made up out of rock crystal plates.
Right.
And the sun's light was directed, it was reflected into the shaft, onto the mirror, focused just beyond the exit point, and the prism structure had a series of faceted sides, and the idea was that beams of light shone out at compass points.
I see. That's during the day.
Yes.
What about the night?
Well, at night they used to use a fire, and the cupola where the fire was above the prism arrangement. The prism arrangement was below it.
Continued in episode 24. Thank you for listening to AstroTalk UK. AT UK is a non-profit project produced and recorded by Gurbir Singh. He nor any of the participants are paid for their contribution. AT UK's content is not validated against any authoritative source, and all the views and opinions are held by those who choose to express them. If you have a topic of interest you would like to discuss on AT UK, drop me a note, info@astrotalkuk.org.